Hello, and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, January 16th, 2020, otherwise known as National Nothing Day. Literally, that's the name of the holiday, is National Nothing Day. So, nothing to say.
Yeah. I do have something to say on how you said 2020.
What did
I say? I've only heard people say 2020.
Did I say 2020?
You said 2020, and it sounded great.
I'll stick with it for, the next 11 and a half months.
I like it a lot. Well, welcome back from Vegas. You missed last week.
Yeah, what did I miss? Anything
Probably
good?
The best episode we've ever had. But
world's greatest.
It was a fun one. The only problem with it, though, is it didn't come out the day it was supposed to.
We're dropping a deuce this week.
I was about to say, I think lately you've been uploading our episodes, and for some reason I didn't realize you obviously couldn't upload the episode. You weren't even there to record it with us.
Yep.
So that was my bad. I just forgot to click upload on it and post it. But that should have gone out earlier this week. But we're dropping a podcast deuce. Yeah, you said it, Chris.
An audio deuce.
This is the first, or at least since we did the weekend show way
That's
back.
That's true. Yeah, it harkens back to the day of the weekend shows.
So Chris, how was CES? I enjoyed your stories.
Yeah, I posted a lot of stories. It was.
You are on Jimmy Duresta levels of story posting.
I know. It's like when you look at somebody's story and it's just like, it's not even lines going across the top anymore. It's just dots because they've become so small. Yeah, I think I posted, which probably is not a record, but for me, it's certainly a record, like maybe 80 over the course of the 3 days.
Wow. Yeah, that's more than I've ever done. It was a bold move.
But you know, it was easy because like there was, you just like walk around and just like show this and just talk about it. Like just whatever comes off the top of your head is cool. And like, so video's been kind of the same. I've been editing the video together, which will probably not be out by the time this is out, just because I'm going to need like approval and all this stuff. So hopefully it'll come out soon, but it's been like very different to edit and actually in a way a lot more fun. Now, I don't know if it's actually more fun or if it's just because it's so different to edit this kind of video.
It's like a new challenge.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know what it is so anytime I do a woodworking video, like I kind of know how it's going to come together. And then when I sit down to edit it, now it's just a matter of like doing it. It's like,
yeah, you're just in robot mode, autopilot.
Yeah. You're almost just performing the labor at that point. With this video, it's like very much like, okay, I think I have all the assets. Like there was a lot of me just like interviewing people and stuff. So it's like, I don't know how I'm going to build it all up. And I ended up doing it in a way where it's like voiceover, but then it'll just like cut away to me like interviewing somebody and like doing some kind of little joke or whatever. So I think because it was like, that was the creative part of it more was the editing part more than like the building part normally is the creative part, it seems like. So getting to see it come together and like create in real time was fun. And then just like, actually I'm very happy with the way that it's come out. I'll be very interested to see how people react to it because it's so different, but like, I think it's funny and it was fun to edit. It was fun to put together. So hopefully that all comes across in the video. CES itself,
I'm hyped to
though,
see it. Yeah.
Was cool. So the only down thing I'll say is that I only actually got to go to like the proper CES floor one day during the thing and only for like 3 hours probably just because we were so busy. And the day that I got to do it was actually Monday night, the day before the event officially kicked off. So it was like a lot of the booths were in their like last minute panic mode trying to like get everything set up. So there's like forklifts going all over the place. But I would love to be able to just go there and have nothing to do and just like walk around for a day. I don't know. Ben, you've been there before, right?
Yeah. I was looking online just in general about the coverage and they did some, it's not as big as it used to be, right? So
that's because it's definitely still big.
Right.
You can definitely spend a day just wandering.
The biggest companies don't always save. It's interesting. It's indicative of how media is going in general, right? It used to be this thing where everybody would release their new hottest stuff like at CES because that's where all...
That was the platform.
Right. In old school traditional media days, you didn't have the internet just to broadcast things or be really interesting. So you have to get all the press people assembled, do a release there, and then that'll end up in all the magazines, and that's how you create buzz. So those things used to be really important. Now, if you're Tesla and you would never want to release something like the Cybertruck there, although I did see that Sony released unveiled an electric car there, which is, I mean, really interesting that Sony's doing an electric car. So because you just want the whole attention to yourself and you really want to curate your own audience and you don't really need all that traditional press, they'll pick up from it just off of a digital press release. So those were the days when I would sort of go to CES. There are still major unveilings there, like the Sony car. And I saw a few other kind of gadgets that look kind of cool. But I think what's interesting of it now is more how CES is kind of like Alibaba or something. It's not so much the big companies, because you can see everything they're doing kind of online, and maybe you get to kick the tires of something you otherwise wouldn't get to see in person. But what I think is interesting about those shows more so now is all the kind of obscure, random manufacturers that are doing kind of weird, quirky stuff that isn't quite as polished as the LGs, the Sonys, the Samsungs, and stuff like that.
Almost like Kickstarter in real life.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, look at what these guys are making.
Right. And that's the stuff where you really sometimes those unpolished products that aren't quite there yet, but have a lot of potential, are where being in person you can really make a cool discovery.
Totally. But it is kind of weird how like the whole market's in this weird hybrid stage of like what you're describing, old school CES days versus what they're doing now. They're like literally bringing you, Chris, which, as much as the word sucks, like you're an influencer, and they're bringing influencers to CES instead of, you know, traditional news outlets. And then what you were doing in New York with Mini Bin for their new electric Mini, it's kind of the same idea. It's like, instead of bringing out press outlets and newspapers, they're just bringing out people with Instagram accounts. So it's kind of funny.
You mentioning that brings up something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. And so you guys have a negative connotation with the word influencer, correct?
Not overwhelming. It's just one of those words where like,
I think
it's like entrepreneur. When the wrong person says they're an entrepreneur, it makes the word seem bad.
Yeah, I think
when the wrong person says influencer, it does the same thing, but there's plenty of people that it's not a big deal. Like if I describe myself, I just say I do social media, you know, influencer is kind of a little, I don't know, whatever it is.
I think it's, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, Mike, but I think you get the same feeling of as I do, is there's a certain person that takes a real pride in it that you don't want to associate with.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny though, because I actually think the word is correct. Like
it is, yeah.
And I agree with the kind of entrepreneur analogy. Like I think it's very similar to that. But I was thinking about it and it's like, I don't want to be an entertainer, right? I don't want to just be, I was thinking about what separates what we do from people that are just sort of entertainment. And when I was thinking about it, I was like, well, I don't just want people to watch what I do just as like as just sort of a mindless, something to keep their eyes busy. I do want them to pull something from it and influence them to sort of take action. So what I like, I have the same feeling, but I'm trying to figure out like a way to kind of reclaim that word.
And you know what it is?
What?
So, okay. So I agree with it in the way that you're saying, which is almost like the inspiration side of it, like where they see you doing something like, oh, cool, I want to build stuff and whatever. Like that part of it's cool. I think I always think about it more in like the terms of just like purchasing things. And so I'd rather be a confirmer than an influencer. Where it's like, they've like kind of like, oh, I think that this looks cool. And then like, oftentimes I'll get reached out to by people where I feel like that's what I am doing. It's like, they've kind of made up their mind, but like, they just want to like, hey, like, I'm thinking about buying this. What do you think? Do you guys get those kind of messages?
Totally. Yes. Yeah. You get like, you're their
the confirmer.
Confirmer is a good word. Yeah, exactly.
That sounds like a like TNT drama.
After an NBA playoffs.
Starring Kevin Bacon, the confirmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was thinking about just, you know, plans and goals for the year, as one does at this time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, audience growth for like the last few years has become less and less of a priority.
Yeah.
You know, particularly after the Container House, I saw that like, oh, I can build an entirely new audience with one big project that I find really interesting. And Homemade Modern has sort of gotten to the level that I was happy with. Bigger is always better, but isn't the primary focus. But when I was thinking about it, it's like, well, I want to not scale up necessarily the audience size, but I want to scale up the
project
influence,
scale,
the impact.
Yeah. Oh, that even. Okay, got you.
Right. I want to start, you know, impacting more the way people choose to buy, remodel, or build homes, in addition to sort of DIY projects to make their existing houses a little bit nicer. And then I also want to try to figure out ways to increase the supply of affordable housing in areas like Southern California, where it's extraordinarily expensive. Because, you know, from one, it's sort of going full circle to fewer projects, but bigger projects, which is interesting for me personally. But from the entrepreneurial side, you can reach the same number. Well, I was just thinking of it, right?
I'm joking. Yeah.
If I just looked at it from a business standpoint, is at this point, what would I rather do? Grow my audience 5 times bigger or have it stay about the same size, but influence 5 times more worth of purchasing or influence bigger decisions in people's lives? And that's why I really do like this idea of sort of scaling influence in addition to growing audience.
I like what you're saying. And I think the way you're clearly defining what influence you would like to have is already a lot more tasteful, or a lot is a way of making the idea of being an influencer a lot more tasteful. And while you were talking, it made me think, like, I like that you're trying to influence people to either design or build things like that. Because right now, the general stance of influencer is like, I influence people to have a good butt, or I influence people to drink G Fuel. But like, influencing people to be creative and build things, is that's something to be proud of influencing. So I dig it. I still stand by the idea of, like, I don't know, grandiose labels. I don't like them so much.
Well, self-applied grandiose labels are pretty terrible.
I got to say that Four Eyes Viewers,
to a certain degree.
Four Eyes Viewers.
It is a little bit, yeah.
Have the best butts.
Oh, is that true, huh?
Oh, yeah. Great butts on my audience.
what's the secret?
Influencing squats.
Yeah, it's you got to have a slight knee bend while you're at the table saw all day long.
Yeah. Chris does lunges.
Just
you got to engage your
trash can now. Constantly tightening.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
But what have you guys been up to? What's new? So, Chris, since you've been back, are you just in edit mode or are you building anything?
Let's see. So, I actually am building. I'm kind of in both. But the thing that I've been building lately is this side table that's going to be the, like, I guess YouTube announcement of that I'm doing that whole workshops thing, which I've talked about a little bit on here.
Yep.
You know, which is basically going to be having, you know, 8 to 10 people to the shop for 3 days. We all build this specific project. So I went through a lot of iterations of this side table because it was like, it's got to be cool enough that people want to build it. It's got to incorporate a lot of techniques that, like, people can come and learn and translate into other things that they want to do. And it has to be achievable in, you know, 2.5-3 days. So went through a lot of iterations and came down to one that, like, definitely happy with the aesthetic of it, definitely happy with the amount of technique people will take away from it. And I think people can do in 2.5 days. That part will remain to be seen.
The real challenge is, like, can 8 people do it in 2.5 days, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like, yeah. I guess with there's 3 things you're trying to satisfy, and it's one of those situations where it's like pick 2.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But so trying to combine all 3, I think that we'll be able to do it. I'm not sure exactly, like, when this whole thing will kick off, but we'll at least announce it pretty soon. You know, we have to get the shop expanded and all set up. So hopefully that stuff all takes place over, like, the course of February, and optimistically by April, maybe it could happen. We'll see.
That'll be the first workshop that you do?
That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping, cool, like, by April we can start doing them. I know. I mean, there's also the type of thing, like, you know, this is something that people have to plan for. It's not like you can just, like, oh, this weekend, sure, I'll drop everything I'm doing and potentially fly out of it. You know, people have to make plans. Yeah. So you got to have, like, a little leeway. So yeah, there's a lot of things in the air, but that's the hope, that optimistically by April it could happen.
So I'm excited for you. It's going to be awesome. And it's really cool, I think, the fact that you are pretty much attached to LA. Whittier is in the greater LA kind of area.
Right.
It's not one of those things where, like, everyone is going to have to travel to it. I'm sure LA, there's plenty of people that, like, they can just come through. Like, they don't even have to make big travel plans around it, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think, you know, within an hour radius, we have a good number of people that could, we have well more than 8 people, hopefully, that could be interested in taking class.
And I'll tell you what, if I was just starting building, like, if I wasn't already super comfortable but wanted to learn some stuff, you would be the guy I would want to learn from.
You know, like, what? That'll be, that's like the thing, like, really, obviously we have no idea what kind of people are going to want to come, but, like, my guess is that and hope is that it'll be a mix of people that are just starting and like this could be the thing that gets them, you know, some seat time with some tools and actually building a project, seeing if it's for them. Yeah. There could also be people that are as experienced as us and maybe like they're not comfortable designing or they want to get some design tips or whatever. There could also be people that just like, oh, that sounds fun to go like hang out.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure it's going to be a fun weekend when we do it, you know, working a lot during the day, but then like hanging out at night and stuff. It should be a cool time. So hopefully it'll draw people from those like three different things. And, you know, that'd be awesome if the class could be a mix of people that are beginners and people that have more experience so that, you know, if we're tied up with somebody, somebody else can kind of pitch in and help somebody who might not have as much experience or whatever. I think it could be really good if that ends up being the mix, but obviously no way to know that for sure.
Totally. Man, I'm pumped for it. I'm really curious to see, especially in the, like what you're just saying, especially the first few classes, see what the demographic is. It'll be fun. Yeah. But regardless, you know, it's going to be great.
Yeah. So kind of changing topics, this kind of goes back to something that Ben mentioned. And I don't know if you guys talked about it on the episode that you did without me, but like thinking about this year and the things you want to do. I know Ben just kind of said that he wants to
influence more people, make
bigger impact influence on the harder. Types of decisions. Yeah. Deeper influence.
Hard.
Did you guys talk about that at all?
Yeah.
Last week?
No, we didn't do the obligatory New Year, New Me episode.
So yesterday, this would be Monday, I had this like weird kind of like stressed, anxious, depressed feeling, which like I'll get from time to time. Like that's just like a natural cycle for me that I go through that. And so I was talking with Dolores about it and she was just like asking me questions. And I was saying that a lot of it stems from just the like, man, how can I keep doing this thing for like 10 more years or whatever? I think about that a lot. Like I just look too far out rather than like being present in the moment. And so she was saying, okay, well, how would you describe 2019? What was that about for you? And I said, I would say it was more and better. So it was essentially doing the same thing that I've already done, I've been doing, but doing more of it and hopefully doing better versions of it. And so then she was saying, what do you want to be the theme for 2020? And I was saying, I want it to be still doing like the same stuff, but starting to like establish other streams of income and other things. So that would be like the workshops and the plan sales would be the two big things that I have on my mind right now. So I guess the question would be, do you guys have like a theme that you're shooting for going into 2020?
Well, first, a book that I've recommended before, but it doesn't address what you just described, but I think it broadly is a solution to having less anxiety about what you've been thinking about. And that's called Range by David Epstein. He wrote the Talent Code as well, or not the Talent Code, the Sports Gene, I think. But Range is his recent book. And what it basically explains is how there's often this anxiety of when you start to have success in a particular path, right, which fair to say that you're having, you can start to look too far linearly straight ahead. When often what got you to the place where you're noticing the traction and momentum that you're currently experiencing, it didn't come from a linear progression. It came from experimentation, trying different stuff. But once you start get going, you actually start removing some of the silly playtime in the interest of just streamlining and extracting as much value out of yourself as a machine as you possibly can.
Right.
And what I think about this book, it's not a self-help book. It's really more of a scientific, his background is as a scientific journalist, is in explaining or is in studying how people that are really good at something were often not specialists. It often came from bringing a bunch of different things together. And that's where the sort of unconventional wisdom came from. So I think when you have that anxiety, one thing to remember is that projection of 10 years of the same thing, not only does that not sound very appetizing, but even though things are going really well now, that is absolutely not the most effective way to do it. Because what you're going to see is diminishing returns on growth, even as you see a linear progression of income, audience, and those kind of things, is that you're not going to get exponential growth often through sort of a linear trajectory, just sort of repeated over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. You made me just remember a thought that I had. Okay, so what I was thinking about the other day. I was talking to Dolores again about this. She's my sounding board, I guess.
First of all, I would just like to imagine that the minute you said it to Dolores, she just like slaps you and just says, sack up, Chris.
Come on.
Let your nuts hang.
It's like, give me your pants. I'm wearing them.
Yeah, that's it.
So I was thinking about like the idea of change. And so I got this message recently from a Patreon of all people that said he was canceling his membership because like he feels that I've changed or whatever. And I was like, that's fair. I have changed. But, you know, I think I'm changing for the better. Like, I think I'm evolving for the good, whatever. It's fair. It was a good, cordial dialogue that we had. But I was thinking about like the idea of like when you get, so if you do try something new and you're going to get those negative comments and you're also going to get positive comments. And my thought was that if you read between the lines, they kind of say the same thing. Like either way, when you do something new, what you should hope is that you have strong opinions, hopefully mostly positive, but even negative opinions, if there's just a few, is better than like not getting anything, because it just validates that like you are evolving and you are changing and you are doing something new. So that was like my life gives you lemon, make lemonades of if I get that type of comment, it can be like, okay, I have evolved a little bit then.
Yeah, there's a certain subset of people that just aren't going to be negatively affected by any change.
Yes.
So if no one ever gets mad, that means you're not changing at all.
Right.
Yeah, I like it. That's a good way to think about it.
All right.
Way so to Mike, embrace the negativity. Good
any,
job.
Any overall outlooks, goals, perspectives? Yeah, so,
in 2021?
I mean, finishing the bus.
Dude, that's, well, for one, yeah.
Mike Montgomery, 2020. He'll finish the bus.
Yeah. 2020, it's funny you brought that up. Yeah. More than looking forward to 2020, I tried to do my best to look back on the past year, even the past 2 years. And I think the theme that played out both of those years that are the sort of thing that I would change, because for the most part, I'm very happy with the past couple of years. I've had a good time. I built some awesome stuff and my audience is continuing to grow really fast. So it's all really good things. But there's just been moments strong. And by moments, I mean like chunks of 3 months where I didn't realize it, but I was really distracted from whatever I was doing. And I think my content sort of reflects that, where either I have an idea that I'm excited to experiment with, or I think will perform well, I'll sort of like be like a squirrel and sort of like veer off path and get away from that. And then there was also a lot of sort of like intimidation slash uncertainty around the bus and where all that was leading. And so instead of like the 10-year thing with you, Chris, there was sort of the like couple year thing, like, what am I doing all this for? Or where's all this heading?
Right.
And so instead of like meeting it and facing it, I sort of was like, oh, I got a good idea. I'll just focus on this. This will be good content and it'll be a fun thing to build. And so I sort of let myself get distracted easily. And in the moment, I didn't really realize that. I just thought I was sort of like doing whatever was immediate, but it was really just a veiled distraction in a way. And so my big thing this year is like, I'm only doing things that move the needle. You know what I mean? So like not a lot more friend builds, you know, things that not a lot of things for homies and not a lot of things that aren't moving the needle directly. And I think doing all that is just going to get me in even more of a routine than I've been. So it's just going to be more videos, better videos, and a lot more focus from one video to the next. I want this year not to be some continual series, but I definitely want there to be a through line where if you watch episode 1 through, you know, if I make 40 videos, I want them all to sort of play together in a way. Whereas over the past year and a half, between doing stuff with the bus, being out in Joshua Tree, being in Oklahoma City, and then all the travel within that, there's not that through line to where if you were to watch the past 40 videos I made, they'd be in 3 different locations, 4 different locations with a lot of different sort of context around them. And I don't want to do that again. I want to make sure that everything is really tight. And that's pretty much it. I want to flip a house, turn that into a TV pilot and see if I can sell it to Netflix. That's sort of like the big overarching theme. If I can do that, that'd be pretty cool. If not, I'll just put that content on YouTube and I know it'll do well and just let that see where it takes me. But that's sort of like the grand scheme of things.
So what do you think is the main thing that will enable you to do that? Do you think it's like putting down roots somewhere or?
Well, it's just realistically, it's just getting the bus done, which I'm on my way back to Joshua Tree in a week to do that. And I'll have that done by March. And I know that no one believes me, which you shouldn't. but I am really steadfast in saying that. I'm knocking that out ASAP because that's sort of the thing holding everything else back. But once I get that done, it's literally just buy a house, get a good garage workshop going in it and set up, and then just, you know, kind of going through it room by room.
Yeah.
So that's the beauty of it, is it's all there, and it'll be nice almost knowing what my content is ahead of time. It's like, well, yes, this week, or it's like, well, I got to do this bathroom, then I got to do this bedroom, then I got to do that kitchen.
Dude.
So the content schedule, which I know that's something you worry about all the time, Chris.
Yeah.
The sort of like ideas list are going to come out of necessity instead of just relying on creative moments to be like spontaneously, you know, generated.
Part of the most appealing part to me right now of buying another property,
yeah,
would be like, oh, there's a year's worth of content that'll kind of like,
yeah,
make itself up.
Yeah. And then the furniture within it, it's like, I'll renovate, oh, yeah, all the rooms, and then it's like, well, I need a dining table. So then I can really sit back, go through all of my Pinterest, go through every Instagram bookmark I have, and figure out, if I could build any dining table in the world and it's for me, what would I make?
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, hey, what's a good internet dining table? Because that's a lot of my thought process,
mm-hmm,
pretty regularly when I'm designing projects, is what do I want? And then what do I think the internet wants? And I find a hybrid of the two. Nothing to where I'm sacrificing one over the other. But I do really like the idea of just saying, if there was any dining table in the world that I would have for myself, what would it be?
Right. It's why what you're describing is how context impacts and the resources you have access to impact what you design, right? So mm-hmm, if you take two people that are going to design a product, and one of them is a designer with no manufacturing experience or assets, and the other one is a guy that owns a factory.
Yeah.
The guy that owns the factory is going to design things that his factory can make really efficiently regardless, right? So it's like why we get those weird Amazon emails from people that make everything from like ice,
yeah,
ice fishing boots to sheer dresses to light bulbs, right? It's like, yeah, you know, maybe there's like one, right, group of factories in that area, and there's like one marketing department for all these factories thrown together, and they're just all lumped together. So once you have this audience and you have all these sponsorship opportunities, you can start to act like the designer that owns a factory. You're designing to meet your production capabilities, not necessarily designing to meet your creative interests or your personal sort of curiosity for or design aspirations. You end up, yeah, sort of grabbing the low-hanging fruit. And look, I've done this plenty, and I like doing it. But there's times to shift gears, right? Like, just because, you know, first gear is the slowest doesn't mean it's the worst. It has its certain role, and you just want to be in the right gear to get the most out of what you want at that particular time. And so, it, you know, pulling back and saying, oh, I'm going to get much more intentional about project selection, which it sort of sounds, that's like the big takeaway I take from your saying, is get really specific, focused, and intentional on project selection as sort of a vacation from the sort of like, you know, you produced a lot of stuff last year. And yeah, it was like, you know, you're cranking out projects, and this recent trip to New York, you like knocked out, like in both trips, you were knocking out like three built projects in 1 week.
Right.
Crazy.
But in doing so, that kind of speed, you rely on things that you already know.
Exactly. Yeah. You know the things you know won't go wrong, or you build the things you know won't go wrong. Yeah.
Right. And so there's efficiency is important. Variability is also important. But really, it's just being in control and knowing what you need creatively at that time, and then also what you need financially at that time. I think, yeah, also you're doing great financially, which is why I think your brain's starting to shift to being like, no, I need it to be a little more aspirational and a little more focused and doing that.
Right.
And yeah, you're in a position where, hey, you know, I actually think what you're planning will reap even bigger rewards given the way sort of content's going. But I think more importantly, I think it'll get you sort of reinvigorized. Not that you're ever like low energy Mike.
No, yeah, that's true. But I think you're right. Yeah, I think it'll be a thing that'll be ultimately really rewarding personally. But at the end of the day, I think the internet is full of basic DIYs. And as much as I enjoy building things that I know other people are going to make, the content is there for a lot of people. And so I think the more unique, or maybe even the more complicated, and not complicated for the sake of it, but maybe doing something a little more complicated, you know, when it comes to joinery or material or some technique, that's all things that are going to make the content more interesting as well. So I think it'll be a thing where I'll enjoy what I'm building more, and the people watching it will have more to kind of gain from it. So I think it'll be a classic win-win, and that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Classic so win-win.
For me, not too dissimilar from you, Mike. Like last year, so it's funny, like 2018, I thought was like a really momentous year because there is these big projects and challenges with the Container House and all that stuff.
You hit that milli.
Yeah. And then last year, I felt like it just went by so fast because there was a lot of repetition. There's a lot of cool traveling. I mean, literally went around the world and all that kind of stuff. But it felt like it just flew by because there wasn't as many sort of like big dedicated projects. It was these things. So I think I'm going to try to go somewhere in between for this year. I have a pretty good sized project that I'm not quite ready to announce yet, but
dun, dun.
I'll definitely be building buildings this year. Let's just say that.
Yeah, you'll be building on a pretty big scale.
Yes. And yeah, I'm excited about that. And I think the way I'm trying to structure it now is that I'm not under the time constraints that I was in with the Container House, so that I can actually do a better job sort of editing as I go. So there isn't just this binge, you know, this binge and purge diet where you like starve for a while and then you eat a whole bunch, and like it's not a very efficient way to do things, where it was like build nonstop and then have all this footage. You're trying to move a camera on a tripod around at the same time, take advantage of all the labor. The whole situation wasn't actually conducive for capturing content, you know, which is why I'm so grateful that the video series is just killing it.
Yeah. Thank God it was worth it.
Yeah. That'd be, it'd be really depressing. So going to be some bigger projects as well. And then I would say the other projects, I think I need to design more things that I actually want to use, which is similar to what you're sort of talking about. So I'm going to be doing that. I also have the thing that's giving me anxiety right now is I have to do I'm doing a talk at Google coming up in the end of February, right after WorkbenchCon. So it's like I don't get nervous public speaking. Like I'm good at this point, but I get nervous when I'm writing new material, right? And so this is going to be sort of new material. It's where, I think the last time I really, you know, like every couple of years, I'll do like a new talk that's a little bit different. Like, so it's like my version of like a comedian stand-up new special. So like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I did my TED talk. Like 2 years ago, I did a talk on trickle-up design at Autodesk. And then, you know, the speaking gigs I do in between that are basically just kind of updated versions of those two talks. But this one's going to be a little bit different where... One, I'm going to be talking kind of how I think, because I'm going to be able to talk to like a Google audience. So one, I can sort of express the gratitude for YouTube as a platform, but then also not tell them what they should do. Because I always think that's like so lame when someone's like, I make videos, you should make YouTube so it does what I want it to do. It's like you self-serving, narrow-focused fool. Like you just come across as a jackass, no matter how many millions of subscribers that you have. But I think what I can talk about is I think I can kind of present it all through the things that people like us have discovered, which about how amazing the platform can be, that when people talk broadly about influencers and YouTubes and the sort of Logan Pauls of the world, those things are often like forgotten about, right? And particularly about that kind of idea of sort of real influence and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I'm really excited. And I just got a notification on my Ring and I see a coyote prowling around the Container House.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. Should
pull it up to the camera. Let me see what you got.
Is he renting it as an Airbnb at least?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll send you the clip. But yeah, so I'm excited about that. Also, I have to start writing the speech, so I'm like procrastinating because like writing talks is not fun and putting together PowerPoints, but very, very excited about the year. Got to get the whole band back together at Maker Ranch and going to do some big things. Oh, also very excited about going to be doing Makesgiving again this year, which should also be really fun because that was definitely one of the highlights last year.
Chris is going to have to clear his schedule this time around.
I know. Hopefully me and Sean can come out for a couple days instead of what I went and came home in one day.
I know.
I did a turnaround.
People came from the other side of the country and stayed for a week, Chris.
I did a turnaround to Joshua Tree. I was going to ask a question about the the building's secret project. This time, do you think you'll like enlist more help from a production point of view or any help?
Yes.
Okay.
I will do less physical construction and have more production help.
What about like in terms of like editing or anything like that?
I think my goal is to do a total building as a 45-minute special, basically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think I can tie it all up in 40 minutes to an hour, but and have a full building start to finish, go on those things. I think the other thing that I'll be doing more kind of like camera confessionals, where it's like, you know, every day after whatever we're building, I'll sort of talk to the camera to sort of really capture what I was thinking about that moment or what those challenges were, mm-hmm. just as a way of also having notes. So even just doing, I think, that like 15 to 20 minutes at the end of every construction day will give me a lot of content to make the voiceover less trying to remember what was going on.
Yeah, that's
and it can serve as the voiceover in a lot of situations.
Exactly.
Too.
So I think that'll be the big production change that I make. I think I'll definitely use an editor for it, but I'll also sort of storyboard it out beforehand, which is something I've never really done too much with video production. So.
Yeah.
I'm excited. It'll be a different kind of content challenge and obviously a different kind of like physical challenge, but a very timely one, particularly for people in California.
Nice. Mike, do you have any, I don't know if you even want to talk about this, but do you have any leads for like a house renovation?
In terms of where am I going to do it? Is that what
yeah.
you mean?
Yeah.
I'm leaning more towards Oklahoma City for a couple mm-hmm. of reasons. I've got some of my oldest friends, they have a media company where they do a lot of production they do a lot of media buying and a lot of like social media for a lot of companies local, but they also do a lot of TV commercials and a lot of editing okay. for things like that.
So from a production point of view, you're looking to like go up a level from even like what a Modern Builds video is in just terms of like the quality of it.
Yeah, well, a lot of what I want to do, and I don't know if this is too big of a giveaway or anything like that, but whenever I do get a house to renovate, I want to treat it just like a Modern Build series where I'm filming and I'm editing like I've always done. They'll look like all the home renovation videos that I've always produced. Mm-hmm. But what I want to do is maybe throughout that process, let's say it takes 4 months to get through the whole house, right? Going room by room. Over those 4 months, I also want maybe 10 days, maybe 2 weeks worth of days where I have a production team with real camera operators, with yeah. a person that I'm having to sort of direct and produce things a little bit on my behalf, getting a lot of those OTFs and a lot of those key moments where, mm-hmm. you know, things like demo day and big reveal day, or just days when there's a really big project or a really big thing happening. I'm getting really good coverage with a couple of camera angles, just like what they're doing on TV. And then what I want to do is, for all that content that they're shooting, I'm going to have someone edit and package that together. And I want them to edit it for 22 minutes exactly as if it were a TV show. And then they can also pick from whatever time lapses and shots that I'm getting myself to help fill in all the gaps. But I just basically want to package that, see if I can sell it to Netflix or Amazon, because I don't have connects at Netflix, but I've got plenty of connects through, you know, media companies and agencies that I've talked to that I think I got like a solid 50-50 shot that if I produce it all myself, that it would get picked up. And if it did, that would be like crazy money. And how cool would it be to have a Netflix show, right? Like, that's just insane. But worst case scenario, I've got a really cool piece of content that I put on YouTube. Hopefully that the money generated from that is enough to cover some of the production costs involved. And if it's a thing where the video does do really well and that sort of production is a worthwhile endeavor, like if it's a thing where like it makes sense to actually do it, then if I do another house later on, then I just know, hey, instead of packaging this whole thing like a 8-episode TV series, we'll do the same thing, but we'll just post it on YouTube instead, you know, if the views warrant it. So
I just had a meeting with some people from Amazon. They're in charge of yeah. like buying shows that are already produced. So I'll connect you.
Cool. Yeah. And so where I'm sitting now is it's that idea of like, if I'm doing everything myself, then it doesn't matter if it gets picked up or if it doesn't, I'll just put it on YouTube and people will watch
net.
It. Yeah, exactly. But not to say if somebody wants to give me a chunk of money to not post it on YouTube, I'll absolutely do that. But there's no reason that I should be bummed out that it has to go on YouTube. That's where everybody watches me anyways. That's how everyone's finding me. Like, YouTube is the reason I'm doing what I'm doing. So yeah, I'll reach out and I'll try and do bigger things. But if it doesn't work out, I'm never going to be bummed out to post good things on YouTube.
Yeah. I think, if I had to put money on one platform to last the longest, I'll go YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they've got a big competitive advantage compared to all the other ones in that people produce the content for them.
Yo, did you hear that in the first month of Disney Plus, Netflix lost over 1 million subscribers?
Did they really?
Yeah. Huh. Common for them.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I mean, it's probably less that and more just like, there's more options. So like you're going to get a little watering down of where people are.
Yeah.
If there's more places to be.
It's interesting, right? Like HBO Max is coming. I think NBC might be wrapped up with that, or they might be doing their own. There's a few other sort of big streaming services coming. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because it's just like, it's going to end up being like, if you have all of them, it's going to be just like having like all of cable, like a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah.
That'll probably be about the same price.
I've already deleted Disney Plus though. I got through Mandalorian and I'm like, there's nothing else on this platform. Oh, and I just removed it.
If you got kids, you keep that
if you have kids, it's, if you have kids, then it's like the best thing that's ever been invented.
I think since it's come out, that's been the, I'm sure if I could look at the analytics of what platform we've used the most, it would be that.
Yeah.
Because they're watching it all the time.
That's is there like a comprehensive like analytical analysis sort of software that you can install on your laptop and your phone and your thing so you can really just see
your usage?
Yeah, just to see. Because like, probably you can see, you know, your usage of your phone all sort of divided up and you can see it to some degree on your laptop, but it'd be interesting to get that all in one place of like, this is where you're watching content, the totality of your content. Because it'd be interesting to see, like, what I'm always curious is like how Instagram stacks up to like Netflix, for example, right? Like Instagram, way more users, but does Netflix, when you sort of watch it, I would assume for most people, they're watching it for more minutes in a row, whereas Netflix is like opportunistic, like look at it for 20 seconds here.
Let's do a very small sample size with just the three of us. So obviously this will be skewed because we all use Instagram for work, essentially. I would venture to guess that I'm probably using Instagram on average 30 minutes to 45 minutes per day. And I personally don't average that much with Netflix.
Yeah, because if I watch Netflix, I usually watch one episode or two episodes of something, but I don't watch like Netflix every day. But I'm on Instagram every day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of little 5-minute sessions.
Yeah. I think YouTube, for me, I think YouTube wins the whole game in terms of where I'm spending, where I watch the most content or what I have the most screen time on.
I
think
YouTube wins.
YouTube's last. I just like never watch YouTube.
I watch a good chunk of it. I mean, it's all like non woodworking stuff, pretty much.
Yeah, mine is too.
It's like cars and shoes and all kinds of weird stuff, video games. But yeah, I would say that's where I spend the most time. But yeah, like there must be something like what you were talking about, Ben. It would just have to be essentially what you have on your phone, but installed further up at the pipe, like at your modem or something, so that it's just like getting all the traffic from every device. And here's what you're watching.
Right. So Mike, if you sort of had your show all kind of edited together, right? Your whole series or your pilot for your house flipping show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have like a good idea for how it'll do on YouTube with sort of integrated sponsors and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take a deal from Netflix for half the money that you could do on YouTube just to get to that platform?
No, I'd only go to Netflix if it was more money. That's sort of like where I'm seeing it.
So we didn't go for less?
I feel like it's same money. I would rather do it on YouTube than Netflix.
Exactly. Because and I think what it's going to come down to is I'm not going to be getting paid as talent. I will be like the producer. I'll be the guy packaging everything together. So I'll be able to get a lot more money than if they were just hiring me like HGTV would be hiring me. So I think there's an opportunity to package together a season and make really good money. Otherwise, like what you just said, I'll just keep putting it on YouTube because I like YouTube.
So if that was the case, you may take less money as a gamble that it was going to do well and that the payday comes later.
Yeah, there's a certain level of like new audience that you get from being on Netflix. And let's be real, how tight is it to just have a Netflix show, right? You just walk around. That's how everyone introduces you, right?
Walk around.
Like, you know, that's how
I got a YouTube.
Or that's just how everyone introduces you. It's like, oh, this is my buddy Mike. He's got a Netflix show. He thinks he's a big deal or something. You know what I mean? Like, that's what my friends would do.
Yeah, you know who else?
That's how they would like,
you know, who else
jab
had a Netflix show?
Who?
Who?
Kevin Spacey, buddy. How good is he
doing?
One
of the first ones.
Yeah, really, really set them off.
That's interesting.
Is that who you want to be associated with, Mike?
See, I would take
not that particularly, but there's just a there's just a credibility layer that I think is cool with it.
I would take half the money to get to a new platform like that, and my logic would be that if they underpay the first time, it's only going to open it up for market rate the next time. It just means you're going to perform. You're going to provide. It's just going to be that easier to designate ROI. And at this particular phase in my career, I don't need to make every dollar on everything.
Exactly.
But I think what would be an interesting thing to sort of consider would be sort of actually working out those scenarios, right? Of how do you actually forecast the value of diversifying to these other platforms? Now, if it was like Hulu, I'd be like, no, you got to pay me.
Exactly.
Your brand ain't that good.
I agree wholeheartedly. And so whenever I'm thinking about it, I'm going to get a lot of numbers off of the Tiny House series, the School Bus. And then as I'm, you know, releasing the series, as we're packaging together this pilot, I will be releasing content, you know, as I go room to room through this house. And so I'll start getting an idea of how much the average video pulls. And with that, I'll be able to figure out how much, you know, market rate for sponsors and all that will be on it. But what I'm really interested to see also is as we do this production, I'm curious how much the production itself is going to cost. You know, how much is it going to really cost to get an editor to cut an episode? And if I need him to do 8 of those, you know, what's the cost of that?
Right.
With this first house, I'll figure out either I had people on location too much or I didn't have them on location enough. So I'll figure out sort of like how many days it really does take to shoot what I'm trying to do. And then, you know, the big thing is how much does everything cost? And then when Netflix is, you know, if they buy that content, how much of that production cost are they covering? Right? Because right now my production cost is as low as they can be. I don't have production costs. It's just how long do I spend doing the thing? And so it'll just come down to, is Netflix spending enough money to be able to hire this production crew? Or is the content that I'm making, that if I put it on YouTube, is it performing that much better that it's worthwhile to have a production crew come through? Or at the end of the day, is it just best to do classic modern builds, kind of not in perpetuity, but until I want to do something else? Like, is it better just to do 3 house renovations in a row in classic modern build style? Because the overhead is going to be way low. It'll be a lot less stressful and the content still really does well.
See, I feel like I would take less money to do it on YouTube for that very reason. Like just being that, like, it'll be my timeline. It'll be my way of wanting to do it. And that's not because like I'm so rigid or whatever, but just more like I'll be happier doing it that way.
I agree.
Ultimately.
But hey, man, having a Netflix show is probably really great for your dating prospects, which you don't have to worry about these days.
I do not. And
being married, you know, so, you know, it's just that sort of thing, too.
So you just want that on your, I don't even know what's like a popular date.
Oh yeah, I just want that on my
right
Bumble
now.
Profile.
Yeah, your Bumble profile. You just want Netflix influencer.
I was about to say it's an asterisk entrepreneur. Has Netflix show. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
First of all, Mike, you got to upgrade to Raya. That's the
well, that's
influencer.
How I get on Raya.
What's Dude, Raya?
That's how I get on Raya.
Is it dating app for influencers?
For famous people.
For high profiles.
For famous people. How famous do you have to be? What's considered famous?
Well, Ben somehow got on it, so not too famous.
There's a broad range. And there's like a networking part. And
yeah.
So it's like a cross between like LinkedIn and a dating thing. But there's like 2 columns for those different categories. It was funny. Like, I think one of the most like, so I just have like pictures of my work stuff up there. But like one of the most random people to message me was like Adam Duritz, the lead singer of Counting Crows. And he's just like, cool staircase.
And he wanted to go out with you or what?
No, it was in the networking.
No, I'm kidding.
It was, but he's like, cool staircase. Can you like build me one? And I was just like,
sure.
Possibly. And he's like, yeah, I mean, I only have like 1 floor, but I just think it'd be cool to have one in my loft.
Been a long December.
Just leading to the ceiling.
Yeah.
Nice.
But
go for it.
Step your game up, Mike. But no, I think you know what's great about this conversation is that we all, and this is why it's so silly when people act like there's a best or the best way to do this, because we all described different considerations of the same thing. Mike sort of with like a different focus on the economics versus like the expansion of the platforms, then my perspective, which was a little bit more on the diversifying to platforms, adds a little bit more valuable than just the cash alone. Chris sort of speaking to quality of life. And for all the people sort of out there that are sort of in our community, it's really helpful to remember that community is awesome because it makes you feel like you're not alone. But the downside of community, if there is a very minor one, and it's certainly outweighed by all the positive, amazing parts of it, the downside is that you start to feel like if you're not following what seems to be the average community formula, you're missing out or falling behind or becoming less relevant. When I think it's actually the opposite is true. I think what makes our sort of friendship so strong is our differences more than our similarities. Because otherwise it would just be, and we have plenty of similarities. And I'm sure there's plenty of people going, oh, you guys are all the same. the people in different, with different sort of perspectives. But that one sort of downside of community is that it can kind of create this idea that there's this formula and there's this way that's just an amalgamation of what everybody else is doing this. And I didn't really think about it for our sort of maker community until I was hanging out with a bunch of stand-up comedians, and I saw it really clearly in them as an outsider. It's like, oh, you guys are all like so obsessed with what the other ones are doing, and you're kind of like, they're doing this, they're getting this, and it becomes this sort of like there's in an effort to sort of relate to each other, they kind of like normalize all the peculiarities and complexities of what they're doing almost into like chess pieces on like a regular board, because it's easier to communicate with people when things are more similar. And that's good if it's working for you. But if you do get to that point where you have that anxiety of like, oh, I'm doing this, but I think other people are all moving towards Patreon and doing it this way, maybe I should do that. Ignore that. Unless you actually, you know, have sort of concrete examples how it can make your life better, you really, that's the ultimate thing that you should be serving. The community, once you're a part of it, will be there for you and be a source of inspiration. But it's not contingent upon you following what you think the average practice is.
Yeah. Well, the end of the day, you either like you're early and you're first to something, and that gives you a really good opportunity to kind of like stand out, or you get kind of late to the party and you're just packed into the group. So
is that a Ricky Bobby?
Dude, it sounded like it. But it was good though. It's like you know what I mean? It's like, I'm not going to do TikTok now, but I gave it a try and I realized it wasn't my thing.
Okay,
but I did it a long time ago, to where if I was going to do it, that was when you should have done it. But now it's already too late.
I have a TikTok everybody's theory. There. I think they're lying about their numbers.
I think so too.
I think they inflate numbers early on randomly. So I have done two posts. The second post did like 500,000 views.
Oh, wow.
I don't think those are real views. I don't think so.
Yeah. I just think there's a lot of Facebook bots.
I think they're trying to encourage you to do more.
I agree with you. I'm not going to be the guy that's overly conspiratory about it, but I think that's exactly what it is. They're just inflating numbers so they get more people posting and on the platform.
Gotcha.
But if everybody on TikTok really does have the actual number of followers that they have, then that's crazy. Because people are like, people are starting TikToks and they'll have like 1 million followers in a month.
Oh, wow.
But I think there's so many bot accounts.
There's a brilliance to TikTok. I do think that idea, I think fundamentally what they've done, and it's really effective, and Instagram will copy probably on the explore page, is the explore page on TikTok is outstanding, because they have GIFs instead of static thumbnails for video, and it's all video. So, and you can scroll sort of full bleed, 3 or 4 video clips wide, and you're just looking at video clips really efficiently, and they're all moving thumbnails. So
that goes back to my point I was making earlier, though, about being the first one to do the thing. Like, that's why Instagram got so good. Bandwidth opened up enough to where you could share photos. And so they did that. Before that, people were on Twitter because the bandwidth wasn't really there, especially on mobile. Mm-hmm. And that's what was so popular about Vine. They were the first people to take advantage of video clips. And now TikTok, with what you're saying now, between investing in video like wholeheartedly and also having, you know, less bandwidth limitations when it comes to the explore page and like throwing out more data because people aren't so worried about it now, you know, they're the first ones to the pack. They're the first ones doing it and people notice.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. Even when you were describing me TikTok, there's a part of me that starts feeling like, oh, I need to get on this. I'm missing out. And then, you know, it's so hard to be mature and think about the actual opportunity cost and to actually play out the time investment. It's so easy to think like, oh, it won't take that long. But you're already cramming your schedule full of things that, quote unquote, won't take that long. But the next thing you know, you have to do 60 of those things. And that takes like 4 hours.
Yeah. So only things that move the needle.
Right.
That's it. Yeah.
Well, back to the 2020 resolution.
And it's funny, like I was watching a clip of The Rock on Instagram and I was like, wow, The Rock isn't that articulate. Like, he's very charming and funny, but he's kind of got the same catchphrases over and over again.
Oh, okay.
And The Rock is hugely influential, right? I mean, everyone, and just generally very high approval rating. Everyone likes The Rock.
The Rock's great.
But then I was like, then afterwards I was like listening to like a Malcolm Gladwell book. And, you know, everyone compares those two people together because they're so similar, both in body type.
They're two different people?
Yeah. And I was thinking about it. It's like, and again, just like not trying to answer whose career would you rather have or that, but just thinking about these different ways that people can get their ideas and their message across. Like, I think The Rock is good at getting his sort of like work hard and grind kind of message, but it's a very shallow message. There's not a lot other than kind of like work hard and grind it out and put a boot in the ass of something, right? Like, it's just different. It's like the Mexican food of The Rock saying. It's like the same things, just like organized
same
into
ingredients,
like burritos or tacos or tostadas. Or by the time he gets to the Mexican pizza, you're like, wow, you're really struggling
with
this
one. Ideas here, Taco Bell.
And then I was thinking about people like Malcolm Gladwell, which don't nearly have the level of fame, but it's like, if you take the, you know, I've read two or three of his books, I don't think he's like the best sort of like, he's like, he's not really like a scientist or that. He's more like kind of in between a documentary filmmaker, a journalist that sort of talks about sort of the perimeter of science, not the actual hardcore. His research doesn't go into those kind of disciplined things, but at the same time shakes loose some very provocative ideas that I feel like are very beneficial. And with that, it's like, I don't see the Malcolm Gladwell in my daily media consumption that often. I see The Rock all the time.
Yeah.
But when I do think about him, I like thinking about some of those ideas and how they apply to my life for hours. And they're much more substantial. And I think what we're all kind of saying is that pick the way that kind of actually makes you the most happy would be kind of like Chris's approach, which we all agree with. I'm sort of saying that there's like a power and strength in what Malcolm Gladwell's doing. Not everyone's cut out to be The Rock. And Mike's gonna finish the bus.
That's it. So much over the next like 4 months is just tying up all the loose ends.
Dude,
I'm
pumped for the bus. The bus looks great.
I know
great.
It's gonna be good. Once
you figured out the color blocking strategy, I was like, this is going to be so much better than those like cram pack kind of like van life buses. This is going to be like, it's going to feel more like a moving boutique store or like lounge.
Thank you, man. I appreciate the hype. I don't want to overtalk it though. Golly, that thing is, I have weird feelings about it, but I'm really genuinely excited to get the content out though. But I want to hear, what are y'all obsessions? What do y'all got going on? Any content, videos, music, books that you've been hype on?
Ooh. Well, I don't know if there's... Oh, go ahead.
Well, a couple things. One, getting pumped about WorkbenchCon. That's coming right up. So get your tickets. And it looks like all three of us are going to be there, still working out details. But safe to bet we're all going to be there, and get your tickets and show up. Content-wise, what have I been watching? Chris, you go while I look at my watch history.
All right, here I go. I'm going to come up with one off the top of my head. So this is not something new by any means. It's like 20 years old. But it made me think about it based on the conversation we were having about like the idea of change and doing something different, and like those negative comments or positive comments kind of meaning the same thing. So I actually been listening to Radiohead a lot again recently, which, Mike, I don't know, have you ever really listened to Radiohead a lot?
I've listened to them a little bit, and I do like them.
Okay, so Kid A, which was their album that came out in like 2000, they would have probably been like the biggest, at least critical, like most critically loved rock band of the like late 90s after OK Computer came out in like 97. And so when Kid A came out in 2000, it was highly anticipated, and they did a huge 180 in terms of like the style compared to what their old style was.
Yeah.
Very successfully. Like, so they've been one of those bands that's like been able to reinvent themselves and do something new. And like, you know, a lot of times with bands, I feel like it's like, oh man, I like their old stuff. I don't want them to change or whatever. And it's always like a weird feeling that I get when like, if you like something, you should want to see them change and evolve and do new things. And so they've been a band that's been like great at doing that. One of the best, I mean, maybe the best example of a band that's been able to do that multiple times over. So that's my pick. If you've never listened to Kid A, go listen to Kid A.
Kid A. That's the album?
Yeah.
All right. There's one thing that I know about Radiohead that I like quite a bit. They did a session. It's like called like From the Basement. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about this?
I'm not sure.
If I remember right, like it's like an hour long. It's like 45 minutes maybe.
Uh-huh.
And it's good. It's just like a live kind of studio session. And I like that quite a bit.
Kind of like the same style as those Audio Trees.
Yeah, but it's a little pre-Audio Tree, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, that was like my first exposure to Radiohead that like made me dig them. Because prior to then, as I was growing up, they were just kind of like the hipster band. But mm-hmm. the like hipster band people were kind of like snooty to, but not like Coldplay, where everyone was like, oh, you're whack if you like Coldplay. They still had cred. Like Radiohead was never whack, but it was just like for hipsters.
Right. It was kind of like the popular, big, successful band that... Yeah, you wouldn't lose cred by liking.
Exactly. Yeah,
They were a critic's darling.
Yeah. Okay. So mine is going to be a music pick this week as well. It was new news I heard. So Mac Miller, super dead, but he's coming out with a new album.
the title Super Dead? Dead.
No, I don't know why I said it that way.
Dead from but the anyways, Apollo.
His parents put something on his Instagram that explains it really well. But he came out with an album called Swimming. Last year at some point. And it was one of the better albums, in my opinion, of the year. He did a really good job of bringing in some really cool production, a lot of really new elements that you don't get to see a lot in whatever you want to call the music he's making, like in rap or in hip hop, like a lot of like really strong funk and like old school, like soul kind of elements that are starting to get appropriated and like brought in more and more into the kind of scene. But him working with people like Thundercat and everybody that are like the OGs of the game, like it's really authentic and it was done really well. But something that this post I mentioned earlier was explaining is that album Swimming was developed as like part one of two. And the second album is called Circles. And it's sort of supposed to be the second half of that project. And anyways, they released a single, I think it's called Good News, something along those lines. And it was good. It even leaned more into that old kind of like funk, kind of like soul sound that I was talking about earlier. It's kind of stripped down, that song at least. I don't know what the whole album is going to be like, but it comes out in like a week. It's like out on the 17th or something like that. So they announced it and it's coming out within the same month.
Quick turn.
So that was really cool. But it's something I'm looking forward to. Should be good.
All right. So mine is going to also be a shout out to a famous white rapper. And that is to our good friend Izzy Swan, who's undergoing back surgery.
Oh wow.
Time. So shout out to Izzy. Head over to his Instagram or his Facebook page and give him a little bit of love.
Nice. Hope for a speedy recovery. He'll be at WorkbenchCon, right?
I think so. Hopefully.
There you go.
He was there last year.
Building like a beast, I think was his talk.
I think I remember that. Awesome,
guys. Well, we appreciate y'all listening every week, whether that's in the workshop, on your way to work, or even at your desk at work. Maybe you have headphones on and your boss doesn't even know about it, so you're listening to us in secret.
He thinks you're listening to Excel spreadsheets.
That's right. So however you hear us talk, we appreciate it. And if you want to give us a review on the iTunes app, we always appreciate it. Otherwise, have fun building, and we'll see you next time on the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.